You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, guys. Welcome. This is our last Myopia Mornings, and if you're listening to this when it comes out, next week we not only have an appropriate follow-up to this episode, but I will be at Cineprov riffing on Rocky IV with Dolph Lundgren, where if you were there last month, of course, we did Masters of the Universe, so this is our retrospective, the conclusion of our series on Dolph Lundgren at the Plaza Theater. If you can give us 4 stars, that'd be great. 5 stars is even better. But please rate and review us, share us, join us on Facebook. We have an active community there, and that really helps us out. And then finally, Patreon. Support the ESO Network Patreon. We have stuff up there. We have more stuff coming. We are just about done with this season, guys. And once this season, of course, is done, we're going to go into reruns, which we've talked about on the show. But we're updating them. They'll sound cleaner and crisper. Anyway, I hope you're doing great, and thanks.
Do you like movies? Do you like TV?
Do you like discussing the temporal effects of non-linear time travel and its implication on the plot of the movie Looper?
Okay. Do you enjoy the latest in pop culture news? Do you enjoy superheroes?
Do you enjoy discussing the relative merits of superpowers and their effects on human physiology?
Anyways, if you enjoy these things, even a small amount, you'll love the Rusted Robot Podcast.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, YouTube, and make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Subscribe so you never miss an episode.
TheRustedRobot.podbean.com.
Welcome to Myopia Mornings. This is a podcast dedicated to revisiting the TV shows we all loved as children, or maybe as teenagers, and seeing just how well they hold up. This month we watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the hit TV show based on the flop of a movie that I actually saw before the show ever existed, that Joss Whedon also wrote. Does star Paul Rubens. He's amazing. Look it up. Terrible movie, though. Although Lauren might fight me on that. To discuss whether the show is still watchable, we have on panel today Mr. Nick Hoffman.
Hey, guys. I'm the host of Myopia Defending Childhood, the father, the main podcast.
Yes, the umbrella, as it were.
The goddamn paterfamilias.
We also have Daniel. Say hello.
Hello, this is Daniel, and as the series pointed out, I'm totally the Zeppo.
Sure. And Lauren, say hello.
Hey, is everyone ready to talk about like one of the best TV shows of all time? Just asking.
I know I am, but unfortunately, I'm talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer tonight.
Whoa! Okay. First and foremost, it's obvious me and Lauren were the only ones to actually watch this entire show.
Exactly. Well,
I've seen about 90% of this show, so let's be fair. Not in the last 2 days, though. I've seen 2 episodes. But I, of course, am your host, Scott Miller, one more time. Probably with not that much feeling, though.
Once more with feeling?
We'll see. Let's before we dive into this, let's remind our loyal listeners of what the hell this show is actually about, in case they somehow don't know. This is a very famous show.
Actually, can I try it?
Yeah.
Because I've only seen like 4 episodes of it, and I want to see if I get
it. Okay. Let's see if you're right.
Okay.
Let's give Nick. You know that Lauren and I,
if you get it wrong, are gonna like totally gang up on you, right?
Absolutely.
I was gonna say what I should do is just get like 60 seconds to try to explain it, and then I'll toss it to you to correct me. How about that?
I love it.
That
sounds good. All
right, fair enough.
So the way I understand it is, there's a blonde high schooler starts out named Buffy, who is a vampire slayer, played by Sarah Michelle Gellar in the show, not the movie. She gets recast. And it's based around her and her friends fighting demons and vampires. along with several people who I assume she hooks up with because they all kind of flirt in the first season, from what I saw. But she has, like, an older guy who's, like, a librarian who's kind of, like, a mentor. But for some reason, everyone kind of knows that she's a slayer, sort of. And they're kind of okay with that. There's just demons in this world who control things. But there's not really, like, that Mulder and Scully element that people don't believe what's going on. It seems like everyone's just kind of on board that she's a slayer and is going to be late to school sometimes. Because that's kind of a running joke. Later on, her sister, I guess, is played by Michelle Trachtenberg, and she ends up living in...
Dawn. She's the worst.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we all know not to bring up the sister. That's the Scrappy-Doo of the Scooby gang.
She showed up originally in season 5, and it was a completely random thing where they, like, shoehorned her into the plot.
Really don't know why. Anyway.
Michelle Trachtenberg is from Pete and Pete. That's all I remember.
And Eurotrip and Harriet the Spy and a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, she was like kind of a Nickelodeon hanger-on for a while there. Anyway, that's kind of
so
what
Nick,
I got.
I think you're pretty spot on. You did wonderful, my friend. That's pretty good.
Okay, so who is the librarian guy?
Okay,
the librarian is Giles.
He's the Watcher. He's the Watcher. He's the one who's basically, whenever Buffy like goes, oh, hey, I have to fight this demon, but I don't know what it is, Giles will show up and say, oh, okay, it's this demon, and this is how you defeat them.
He's kind of her protector and researcher.
Father figure,
kind of
because
like a father
they're
figure,
a divorced family.
Yeah. And the show shows Buffy trying to be a normal teenager, right? Trying to live a normal life. And with her friends, and she falls in love with a vampire, and all that stuff. But and the city is in what's called a hellmouth, so that's why all these things happen all the time, and that people aren't really shocked by.
I only recall one other hellmouth being revealed in the series, and that was in Cleveland. Is that right, Lauren?
I think so.
I mean, that sounds right.
That definitely sounds right. That would explain a lot about Cleveland. Well, yeah, so that's
damn it, Nick.
That's pretty much the rundown. She is told she is the Slayer, not unlike Harry Potter, you're a wizard. It is like, Buffy, you are the Slayer. And yeah, all this shit comes out of the Hellmouth, vampires and demons and things, and then wreak havoc on the city. So everyone knows that these are things that happen and whatnot. But yeah, that's pretty much the premise. She builds her little gang of friends.
Xander, Scooby gang, Willow, they're called.
The Scooby gang. And eventually, as the show goes on, it's like, oh, Buffy's not the only one with powers. Let's just give everyone something fun to do.
Well, so. There's a reason for that. And, I don't know.
Is there a good reason for that?
They explain it in the show. Lauren, do you want to take over?
So, I mean, like, Willow becomes a witch. And masters spells and finds spells and gains power, and Buffy becomes a vampire actually at one point.
Well, only in one of the episodes we watched this week, which was Nightmares.
Right.
Well, okay. So we'll get in. We watched 2 episodes for this. You know, it's kind of a longer show, so we weren't gonna watch 3-4 episodes like we normally do. We can say right up front, we did not watch an episode with Angel in it.
He wasn't in any of these.
Angel is a major, major character, major relationship in this show before he spun off onto his own show and took a couple of characters with him. I think it's hard to tell someone they should watch Buffy without giving them a couple of you've got to watch this Buffy and Angel arc from whatever, like, I don't know it offhand, but I feel like that's a major part of the show, is that
for
relationship.
Sure. The ultimate irony, a vampire slayer falls in love with a vampire.
Well, It was the first three seasons that was really about Buffy and Angel, and then by season four that was done because Angel was a spinoff. And
right.
Yeah. Well, ironically, it was the first three seasons that were the best three seasons, so.
Well, there you go.
Empiric sexual tension.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's high school. Up until season two when they actually had sex, so.
No, I agree with you, Daniel, and season six is supposed to be the worst. It's kind of a running joke that season, they call it season sucks.
Well, season five was worse than season six, in my view.
Okay.
Why is that, Daniel?
The entire arc of season five was just terrible. I mean, the villain was just nonsensical. There was no real character arcs.
Give us some detail. Who's the villain?
Okay, the villain in season five was Gloria, and Lauren, feel free to help me out here. Gloria was some sort of
character, but gets her powers taken away because she gets put in a body.
Right. Season five was also the season that introduced Dawn. It was just a mess. I mean, at that point, Buffy had, I think, dropped out of college. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was kind of confused about what it wanted to be in terms of the overall arc of mid-20s existence, which was kind of what Buffy was about. It was like, okay, here's your life at 16. Here's your life at 25. That's what the show's about. And,
I feel like it was trying to do a couple things to see what stuck. It's like,
I mean, when I think about it, there was only one good episode in season five, and that was The Body, which is when her mother died.
Right.
From a brain tumor, so it wasn't like a supernatural thing. They just couldn't bring her back. And that was it was a great episode, but that was like the one good moment in season five. Season six, it started out great. The middle was really rocky, but it ended really great with the Dark Willow arc.
And then I will put this out there, guys, that there's always kind of a tell in Buffy, and it's also kind of a running joke between the fans that you know there's going to be a kick-ass fighting scene when Buffy has on a jacket.
You're not wrong.
When she has on a jacket, you know it's on. And the reason that is because her body double that was in, you know, the choreographer and the fighter, you know, whatever, had a little bit of a different body type than her. So to make it look less obvious on screen and not as noticeable, they have her put on a jacket. So
that is some good trivia.
That's really funny.
That is nice. Yeah, so I like that.
So if you ever watch episodes and you see her in a jacket, get ready, boo.
Oh, it's
She's
on.
She's about to do some fighting.
Oh, the fighting in this show.
It's what amazing. From
the director of two Avengers movies, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's so funny to me. And Dr. Horrible, which might be the best musical of the last 10 years.
I mean, the guy did Firefly.
Better than Hamilton.
Let's not forget he did Firefly.
I don't know about that. Dr. Horrible is pretty sweet. I could talk for hours on that. But what did you guys think of the episodes?
Well, okay. Well, hold on. We're getting ahead of yourself. So our idea here is that we're going back to see, you know, what did we remember from this show? Now, I mean, it was the late 90s and early 2000s, so we weren't little kids or anything like that. But, you know, teenagers or high school age, we're probably around the same age as Buffy, that kind of thing. I don't remember watching this show at all when it came out. I may have caught one or two, but probably not on purpose. I really watched it like 10 years ago when the girl I was dating had the full series and she rewatched the whole thing. And so I caught like 90% of the show that way. So I've seen most of this show. I don't remember any of it.
Nice.
I don't remember any storylines. I was watching the musical episode, and I was like, oh yeah, Willow's a witch, and she has a girlfriend, and my wife was like, wasn't Seth Green a werewolf on this show? And I was like, oh,
sure
yeah.
Was. Oh,
yeah.
And, you know, Spike was on the show at that point, not Angel, and blah blah blah. So it was all the characters were coming back to me, but I really didn't have anything, you know, I didn't watch it when it came out. I didn't fall in love with it when I watched it, when I finally did watch it. So I'm kind of like a blah on this show. So I don't have a whole lot that I'm probably going to add today. So I'll let more of Lauren and Daniel hype up the show and kind of go all over right. like Lauren. So like you've seen the whole series, you seem mm-hmm. to like it a lot. Did you watch it when it came out originally?
I watched it some in high school for sure. Like I would catch it, you know, and chat about it. I wasn't too into it. When I really got into it actually is when I was a freshman in college. And that is because the way my class schedule worked, I had an hour and a half between classes and Buffy came on TNT. The television show. And so I would go to my dorm, turn on TNT and watch 1 hour Buffy before my next class.
Nice.
So, so that's when I really, got into it and was like, oh, I actually really like this and started following the episodes and stories and got, you know, I got the whole season on DVD and everything then. Yeah. So.
It's a pretty big deal for you, maybe.
My story is a little different. I mean, I remember like my middle school yearbook mentioning Buffy in like the here's what's important in 2002's culture. So there you go. They mentioned the musical episode, which we watched for this podcast. But I didn't actually see it until 2007 is when I first got into it, and at the time I was a part-time employee at GameStop, and every other person there was like, oh, you've never seen Buffy? You gotta watch Buffy. So I found it at like this local used record store, and it was like $10 for each season, and I got the first season. It's like, all right, these people won't shut up about it, I might as well watch it. And the first season, I won't say it's amazing now because the other seasons are better, but it definitely hooked me. I was definitely addicted after that, especially after one of the episodes we saw for this one, which was Nightmares. I'm like, this is really smart. This is really creative. It's better than I expected it to be. So after I saw that, it's like, oh, okay, I better go back to that record store and get the other seasons. And this was before, you know, everything was streaming online, so...
Right.
So eventually I got them all, including back when they sold these at Walmart. And, I've been an addict ever since. They've had all these actors at Dragon Con. I've got Xander's autograph. I've got Nanya's autograph. I've seen panels with James Marsters on it. And it's just an amazing show.
Oh my lord, you're a super fan, sir. Are you a all Joss Whedon super fan?
Not so much lately. Ever since he got addicted to the Marvel Universe, but I mean, if he ever wants to do something original, I'll definitely watch it. Watched Dollhouse, if anybody remembers that, back when that first came out. I was watching that live, so. That's about the fan I am.
So Joss Whedon is a genius. And Scott, I will tell you this, if you don't know this about me, every year at Dragon Con, Dragon Con has they show Once More with Feeling with a shadow cast. And it's a huge thing. And I've done it the last couple of years. I've been one of the minions every year. It's really fun.
That's why I chose the episode.
Oh, okay. So it's got a little cult following. Like,
for sure.
I've totally been to those Dragon Con live shows. They're amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool. I did not know that. I think I've seen that episode before, but I had no idea it was its own thing.
It might be. It's the most Joss Whedon-y thing that's here.
Yes.
Like right. The other episode we watched, Nightmares, felt very much like a not X-Files episode.
You know?
Yeah.
Like a kid who puts memories in people's head of their nightmares and makes them think they've come to life. Like, yeah. That's very X-Files.
Definitely.
Well, I'm going to jump in as a fan here. The Nightmares episode was supposed to be the musical episode. Like, Joss Whedon had been pitching that forever. And the network execs were like, no, this is your first season. A musical? We're not doing that.
Well, that's fine. But I'm just saying.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Huh. Well, I mean, I like the idea, but I mean, I never watched the show. I mean, that's my secret background on this. I never watched this much. Yeah. Lauren and I were friends in high school. She knows me back then. I was tall and nerdy. So it should have been right up my alley. I just never came across this one. I was really, I guess, more of the comedy side of this. And then when I was dark and brooding, I was super dark and brooding, I guess, as whatever that means in college. In college just means, I guess, you're really an asshole. So I was an asshole in college. And when I broke up with a girlfriend in college, I just watched bleak stuff. And for me, Buffy was a little bit lighthearted, which probably would have done me more good than what I ended up watching. But, you know, so to me, this was kind of like X-Files light, even though it's not, obviously. I'm not going to say that now, but to me, watching it like on reruns. And so to Lauren's point, when I stumbled across shows in the middle of the afternoon, because that's what you did between classes rather than doing work, I was watching things like Star Trek, which I had never watched before, because that was the thing on TNT instead of TBS or whatever. You know I was that nerd. Don't even pretend.
Is Buffy still on cable? I don't know anymore.
You know what? It may be. Maybe Nickelodeon has it.
I don't think so. And they took it off Netflix. I was very sad.
Yeah.
Oh, it's on Hulu.
It's on
though,
Hulu
so.
Now. Complete with commercials for some reason.
Yeah.
Unless you pay extra.
Exactly. Hulu sucks. But we're not here to talk about Hulu.
I mean, we
or are we? No. Let's we've mentioned them, the two episodes we watched. We watched Nightmares from season one and Once More with Feeling from season six. But
nice.
No. Now that's actually kind of how I feel about the two of these.
Okay.
Nightmares, Nightmares is, I guess, a quickie synopsis is that everyone's nightmares are coming to life, basically, in real life. There's a history test you didn't study for, you're standing naked in front of class, you're attacked by giant spiders, your father tells you he actually hates you, like, everyone's little nightmares like that are all coming true. And it's all traced back to this kid who's in a coma, I guess, who played baseball. I don't know. The ending was really silly. But the rest of this, yeah, it's like an X-Files episode. Weird shit is happening. And I thought it was done well. And especially for Buffy, it had that right balance of joking about it, but also, like, this is serious and messed up kind of thing. So I thought this was a good episode to watch. No Angel, no, you know, it's just got the very core group of guys. But I thought it was a pretty good one, actually. For how blah I am on the show, I actually enjoyed this one.
All right, that's cool. This is one of the better ones. I think this is one of Joss Whedon's favorite episodes as well.
So I personally liked that this episode, it played on all kinds of fears, right? Like the kind of like what you were saying, Scott, the everyday, you know, I love that they just didn't do the violence, oh, I'm getting chased or murdered fears like they did, you know, what you would actually have nightmares about, like, you know, even yeah. Clowns, I know, even some of my friends I know are terrified of clowns, and they showed that, so I just thought that was really different rather than the gore, go for the gore, yeah. Scary,
well, we have
you know,
to
typical nightmare.
We have to call out Cordelia's worst nightmares being a bad hair day and being put on the chess team.
Oh, in the first season, Cordelia was the definite popular girl stereotype.
Yeah.
Season two, that started to change, and then she went over to Angel, where she was completely different. But yeah, that was funny precisely for the reasons you're talking about.
But yeah, no, I enjoyed that. Little jokes like that.
They even have, like, when she goes down to the basement and to get a smoke and she's beat up, they have her behind a smoking kill sign. Like, that's just, you know. They throw in little things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was joking about that watching it. Like, oh, of course the girl going to smoke gets attacked. Like, don't smoke, kids.
Who was the guy, Lauren, that had all the tarantulas come out of his textbook?
Oh, that was their classmate. Was it Billy? It was their classmate.
I could have sworn that Billy underwent an arc where he found out he was gay, and then, like, he eventually got killed and then returned in, like, one episode as the undead or something.
That's not gay.
Oh, maybe.
It's that kind of show, Nick.
Yeah, no, I get you. I follow.
Yeah, and then they find out that like the kid leak, it ends up being that he has to fight this monster, and it ends up being the coach, the little kid's league coach, beat him up.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Just kind of messed up.
Lost him the game. The big game. So he beats up a kid and goes to jail.
Oh, man. Lucky 19. That's who you want to bet all your money on.
So, I mean, it's a pretty messed up episode. But, I mean, pretty good. Pretty good introduction to that. This is not... It's called Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but it's not just about vampires. And it's not
this
just
This was the first one that felt like it had an overall grand ambition. I mean, before then, it had been kind of Monster of the Week, X-Files-Z episodes. And there was, like, an episode where Xander got possessed by a hyena spirit. But this... Yeah, and, you remember that, Lauren, right?
Yeah, and almost gets eaten by a praying mantis.
Sure. Oh, yeah, the substitute praying mantis teacher that has sex with
him. That's actually a praying mantis, yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, to me, this was the first episode that made me realize, oh, this is actually a very unique TV show because it responded to all the horror tropes that it was copying.
Hmm.
I felt the same way when I saw Millennium for the first time.
No, that's not a bad comparison.
No, so what I'm confused about this episode is the master is the evil man that Buffy runs into a lot, but I didn't understand the connection between him and the boy that was giving these nightmares. Was he with the master? Was it why the master was in this episode.
I'll jump in here, Lauren. First off, Nick, you might appreciate this. The guy who played the master is Niedermeyer from Animal House.
Wait, really?
Yeah, for real.
That's silly. That's really crazy.
That seems unnecessary, but yeah, okay.
Well, Buffy invented this whole trope of the big bad, which is like the overarching villain throughout an entire season. Mm-hmm. And for season one, that was who the big bad was the master. It was like this 1,000-year-old vampire.
No, I get it. He's like Rita Repulsa from Power Rangers.
No,
he's the one who has plots the whole time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for this particular episode, the master was Buffy's ultimate nightmare. So that's why he was showing up, was because Buffy had this underlying fear of the master coming out. He was trapped originally in that graveyard that she was buried in.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually the whole final episode of season one was that he was going to be free to do whatever he wanted to Sunnydale. And that was her ultimate fear. So it shows him actually doing that in this episode.
Right, no, I get that, and Buffy becomes a vampire because that's her worst fear. But I'm talking about like the beginning scene. He's with the boy, and he's like, "What did you fear when you were?" And he says, "Monsters."
There was that separate kid vampire was supposed to be the master's heir, right?
Right.
That Spike eventually kills.
Right. So why? I was just confused why they were that little part. I guess I don't know. Whatever.
I can't help you there.
The master was there.
Yeah, I got nothing. Just
because of Buffy's fear, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Because, as he says in the episode, a dream is the wish the heart makes.
Oh. Okay.
How dare they violate Disney? How dare they violate Disney? Anyway.
I don't think it was a violation of Disney. I think it was perfectly in the spirit of what Disney meant. To kind of walk you through this, at first the nightmares are kind of simple. We get the guy who has the tarantulas come out of his textbook at school in the middle of class, and then we slowly get other things like Xander showing up to class naked. We get Giles getting lost in the library and being unable to read anything, and then we get
Giles can't read. That would be your fear, Nick, right?
Silence. We are crushing it with the dead air, let me tell you.
Well, all right, to fill this dead air, eventually goes to like Willow being afraid to sing with the Pavarotti-ish opera singer.
Right.
And then just reality goes to hell. I mean, you got Cordelia joining the chess club despite her objections, and then Buffy becoming a vampire after being buried alive by the master, and it's all just a mess.
Yeah, Xander gets attacked by Nazis and clowns. And
oh, the clown. Yeah. With the candy bars that lead to the clown. That was freaky.
See, like, all this to me seems like an X-Files episode. I don't know why. It's very silly.
It's definitely an X-Files episode.
That's absolutely what the first season really was. It was a Monster of the Week episode that occasionally had the master in it.
Yeah, like, I mean, like the smoking man. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It just, this to me especially felt like, you know, the X-Files at this point was winding down. And it felt very much like that. So I like it. I thought this was actually a really good in for me, therefore, because it was something I could relate to. Like, I had seen shows like it, and I was like, oh, okay, this is what it is. It's a sillier version. Because I did. I laughed at a lot of this. The jokes. There were very clearly jokes. The idea that this meathead guy, who's Xander, I guess, would just randomly eat candy bars off the floor and then keep finding him and thinking, hey, this is pretty good.
Oh, don't knock Xander. Xander was pretty much me in high school. It was him and that guy from my so-called life.
So I'll retract meathead, but otherwise he's kind of he's kind of a doof. Now, I mean, like, and yeah, like his answer is like, don't worry, Buffy will fix it. Which, I mean,
Xander's the one, like, the only one who, if I remember correctly, never has any powers or never learns anything. He's just, like, the guy who's there who was really into Buffy
purely,
and just kind of hung
humor,
around.
He's purely for humor, really.
Hmm?
Yeah. He's purely for humor.
That was the whole point of that later episode, the Zeppo, which is entirely from Xander's point of view, and he's just riding along with these murderous vampires, and he has no clue what he's doing. So you're not wrong, but that was the point of his character.
Yeah.
But that's fine. Like, that's a very Joss Whedon thing to do. Like it's like Moist from Dr. Horrible.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or Hawkeye from the Avengers movies. They're kind of worthless, but funny.
Well, in a scenario like this where you have a gang of a slayer and her, like, knowledgeable mentor and a witch and thing, you gotta have a straight guy who's just, like, along for the ride, like we are. Gotta have someone like that who can poke some holes in it and be a little meta and be a little silly. And,
well,
and
you need levity, because
really
otherwise
well.
You have a teenage girl just killing people.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Oh, killing vaguely handsome men.
Sure.
I was in love with Xander, and I really was, and I swore that I was going to name, if I ever had a son, that I was going to name him Xander.
What happened?
You mean
now,
you have a
there's still time.
Brown-haired men? I never would have guessed what Scottish your husband too.
I did, but now he's like, Nicholas Brendan's having lots of problems. He's been in rehab and in jail. Like, I hope he's doing all right, man.
Oh, goodness.
Reach out, man. You know, I know you look up Buffy every time and, you know, reach out. Let Lauren know you're okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's a fun piece of trivia for everybody. Nathan Fillion's character in Firefly was supposed to be played by Xander.
And then he was in prison at the time?
No, it just, Nathan Fillion had the better audition, and Nathan Fillion had already been in season 7 of Buffy, so Joss Whedon's like, all right, I know this guy, let's go for it.
I will say, though,
nice.
If you had given it the other way around, like, what other Joss Whedon regular was supposed to be, or could have been Xander or vice versa, Nathan Fillion's kind of the one, like nowadays, oh, yeah. since Fillion has a career, you would have been like, give me someone with a Nathan Fillion type, and you would have hired Xander.
Well, first, it's a shame that you say he still has a career, because Xander was my favorite.
Well, but, I mean, he does, though, right? Like, I never watched a minute of Castle, but Castle lasted for 30 years, yeah, or something like that, much. Right?
Yeah.
And now Firefly is getting a movie that's coming out soon.
What?
It is?
I thought so.
Do we have breaking news? Is this breaking? We have to play the breaking news. Boom.
Yeah. Let's play breaking news.
Nick, I think you're right.
Firefly, the what?
The second movie after the first one didn't do well at the box office.
Let's see. Firefly movie, maybe not. I swear that they announced that it was coming back, though. Am I crazy? Maybe I'm crazy.
Maybe you're crazy.
Look at that's Wikipedia. Like a very common April Fool's joke for parody websites, is Firefly officially renewed. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, you know what? You're probably right, but whatever.
I think you see it everywhere online, but it's never true.
I mean, that's true. I could have said that it came out on the internet last week, and I could say that at any point ever.
That's fair.
That's fair.
Well, let's move on to our musical episode from season 6, Once More with Feeling, which has a revised opening title sequence to make it look like a 1950s musical. Joss Whedon.
Like La La Land?
Yeah. It's about as good as La La Land. Joss Whedon.
Don't insult Buffy by comparing it to La La Land, sir.
Well, I mean, it's all not up my alley. So this is later in the series.
The idea of this episode is that a demon named Sweet makes people, which I love, Sweet, makes people break out in song, and the songs express our hidden truths or hidden secrets. And Joss Whedon wrote and directed.
Yep.
And wrote every song of this episode, which I just think is awesome.
Yeah, and it's a good precursor to, like, Dr. Horrible, and, you know, shows how he's able to do that pretty well. I mean, all the music and lyrics by Joss Whedon and direction. So, I mean, that's pretty cool, I think.
And every show, I think, really, if it makes it past 5 seasons, has to have a musical episode. I think that's just like a written rule, so this was Buffy's.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, I will say, not everyone can sing in the cast. Some people sing.
We should definitely address that at the top. Why is the cast singing these songs? Why was that necessary at all? Who expects,
because that
who
was
expects
part of the
them
gimmick.
To sing? Like, like, you look at it, it's really Sarah Michelle Gellar, it's really Allison Hannigan, who cannot sing at all, singing and dancing, and I'm like, again, this is like La La Land. Why make a musical, and why make your people sing and dance if they can't do either one?
Well, Allison Hannigan specifically asked to not sing much, because she knew she couldn't sing, so that's why she only has that one little singing part.
That's silly.
And I love her, but she's right.
She's right.
Although, I will say, though, to Daniel's point, Daniel, you're wrong, because it would have been even funnier as a Scooby-Doo mystery if none of the gang sang and everyone else around them did, and they just and they heard a whole bunch of, like, singers, and then all of a sudden Buffy starts to sing, because she can, and then the guy you called the Watcher, he's okay, he's fine.
Giles released an album, great. Man.
An album? What's the album? Sitting in the library with Giles?
Music for Elevators, if I recall correctly. I had the album for a while.
He actually had an album. I'm not joking.
Oh, my Lord.
That might be the nugget of the night, man.
Where's our breaking news bump?
It's like that. I just picture that cover of from The Simpsons with Krusty the Clown on Quadrophenia. He called it Crustophenia. It's just like. So, yeah, it's like Giles on the cover of the Piano Man album.
Well, Giles was Dr. Frankenfurter in Rocky Horror in the early 90s, so he was well established as a singer or musical performer.
I mean, he's good, again, but I just, like, there's no reason to make everyone sing. Like, there's that scene with Xander and his girlfriend in bed that's, like, a dance number.
Why? Oh, like, I mean, I get...
I'll never tell gets in your head for the next 5 days, and if you tell me different, you're lying.
I've forgotten it already.
I'll never tell. That's catchy as hell.
Excuse me, Lauren. This is my verse, hello.
Oh boy.
That's in the
so, poor Xander had to dance and shit. You could tell he was like, fine. She was fine. She could dance and was into it. He's just like, give me something really baggy. You can't see if I'm actually moving my legs. Like, oh, poor guy. I kind of feel for the cast of like, you want us to do what now? Oh, we want you to sing and dance and then sing some more. Why don't you just dub over us? Well, I want you to do it. Like, oh my god. I don't know. Poor guys.
I love how it also, I mean, it's Joss, so he has kind of a good language for these things, but it clearly, like, it would all of a sudden turn into, like, a rock musical for a second, and Buffy would be headbanging and singing, and, like, lights would be going.
Well, the heavy metal...
The
bunnies! Yes!
Well, and like, those were the best gags to me, because otherwise, like, you walk out on the street and everyone else is just singing and she gets special effects, like she gets lighting effects. Meanwhile, some fat guy's just in the road talking about how they got the mustard stain out of his shirt.
Oh, that was David Greenwald, one of the writers of Buffy and Angel and I think Lost.
What, the guy singing at the front about his mustard stain?
Yeah,
crazy. Okay. I guess he's a buddy of Joss.
He was also in that Angel episode about the puppets, Smile Time, I think, Lauren.
Robbie, yeah. I missed. I thought it was Kyle Gass from Tenacious D.
Oh, man.
That would have been good. Well, okay. So you've gotten the general tone of how I feel. This episode, I watched about half of it. It kept playing. I totally tuned out. I'm not gonna lie. I have no idea what happens. I'm glad Lauren gave the overview of it because I'm like, okay, sure. I'm like I'm sitting here on the dollop. Like, sure, of course that happened. Why not? Like, I don't know. You guys take it away. Like, this was just not my thing. This
so
is,
Scott,
this
why
is,
this episode is important to the show, I'll just put it this way, is because this is the episode that Buffy finally reveals to her whole group and her whole best friends that they took her out of heaven, that she was in heaven, because in one of the previous episodes, you can probably tell me which one, Daniel, but Buffy dies in Glory's portal, and so she was like a hell demon, and so they thought that she was sent to hell, so they do all these spells to bring her back. Because they think they're taking her out of hell, but so that's the important part of this episode is that Buffy finally reveals that no, I was actually in heaven and you guys took me out.
Ooh, that's messed up. That's pretty cool.
The whole thing was Dawn's the whole point of her existence was that she was like an artificial key to opening this hell dimension, and if she died, then Gloria would win, but Buffy sacrificed herself. And originally, she lied about the fact that she had gone to a hell dimension, and she only told Spike that she'd actually gone to heaven, and that was like a big secret that she was trying to keep. Oh, by the way, the mustard guy was David Fury, not Greenwald, so my bad.
Sorry, David Greenwald.
Sorry about that.
So, okay, so that makes it interesting in that, you know, how do we get her to reveal this secret in a way that, like, she can't help it? She has to get it out. And so this demon comes and makes them all sing their secrets. Like, I can't stand you, but I'm going to live with you or, you know, whatever. And she has to get this out. And so, like, yeah, okay, that's interesting. That's a better idea than what I thought was happening, which was this show had jumped the shark and was trying to be relevant again. But, you know, maybe both.
I mean, that was part of the problem with choosing this episode, because it's really dependent on the entire arc of season 5 and season 6, which is Buffy dying and coming back to life and having to reestablish herself after she's been in heaven, which this episode really makes a lot of references to.
Yeah, and because Dawn's blood had already been in the portal, that's why Buffy went in, because it had to be the same blood, and since they were sisters, it could be her too, so Buffy kind of sacrifices herself for her sisters, well, so that shows that. And then this episode also, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but is the first episode that Buffy and Spike kiss.
Yes, and, it is.
Yeah, and develop that whole love story as well. So.
Well, wait, love story? He kind of rapes her later.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah,
this is a family show, Daniel.
You're right. It's a very violent relationship. But
he's a vampire.
It's a sort of relationship, I guess.
He is a vampire, right? I mean,
right.
Like,
yeah, he is. Well, he gets this chip inserted into his brain in season 4 that basically every time he tries to attack a human, it causes him a migraine.
Yeah, okay.
To have a migraine, I mean.
I vampire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then he eventually gets his soul back after he attacks Buffy. And he goes out to try and redeem himself, so he gets his soul, which vampires aren't supposed to have, and that's the whole point of season 7.
Mm. Soul season.
Pretty much. I mean, I don't know what to say. Lauren, back me up here.
You're right.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're running a little long here, so let me fling things around the panel and let Nick talk a little bit. Nick, Hi. This was kind of a new experience for you. But so I guess instead of saying, did this show hold up, or this show, you know, watching again ruin any memories, I guess the question would be, would you want to watch any more of this? And what did you take away from these two episodes?
I don't know. I found it funny and enjoyable. It just seems like there's a lot of, like, heft to everything, and that's kind of weird. I don't know. I'm an old man now. I don't care about these huge myth arcs most of the time, so I need to figure it out. I find everyone in it utterly charming. The monster man that you called the master in the first one, the makeup effects are good. The story's fun. I think it's funny. I like Joss Whedon's pacing generally, and find, I guess what he finds funny, pretty funny. I just, some of this stuff just seems so heavy down, and maybe it's just, you know, Daniel and Lauren kind of nerding out on it, which is fine. I enjoyed what I saw, but I didn't get a lot of it. So, you know, if that's the nature of the beast, that's fine. It's like any show with a heavy myth arc. But on their own, Daniel and I talked about doing these episodes, so shouldn't back down, Daniel. We made fine choices. But with that in mind, even without knowing the backstory, I found these episodes fine. I agree with Scott. I think the heavier plot points, which we needed to see more of the music, they didn't resonate with me, but I enjoy the music. It's Joss Whedon. I found his sense of humor kind of funny, and I find his music good. So that's where I am.
Okay. Lauren, what about you? Had you seen this show in a while? What episodes would you go back to? You know, that kind of takeaway. What kind of takeaway did you have?
Yeah, no, I loved it. I'm more familiar with Once More with Feeling, because, like I said, I do the Shadowcast every year at Dragon Con. It is kind of a cult episode, but I do love the show. I think it holds up. I think it is, you know, watching it and going back, it did remind me. I don't think it would do well now. This show would not do well now. It is outdated, especially, you know, I'm looking back, a lot of it is not, you know, politically correct, like when they kind of dress Willow up and Yellowface really kind of stuck out to me, just little things like that I don't think would fly nowadays. But for the most part, I think it's fun. It's entertaining. I think the casting, the actors are great. Joss Whedon, I think, is really, really creative and different. And I think as far as musical episodes and shows in general, I do think this is one of the better musical episodes that has been made. I mean, it's certainly better than How I Met Your Mother's, or we could go on, but no, I enjoyed it.
Well, nice. And Daniel, I think we know what you think, but any parting words?
Well, I guess I only have one bit of parting words for this.
Oh, God.
What a lot of fun. You guys have been real swell. And there's not a one who could say this ended well. All those secrets you've been concealing, say you're happy now. Once more with feeling. Now I gotta run. See you all in hell.
Oh. Woo! Perfect. I needed a new ringtone.
that's about it right there. There it is.
Perfect.
Pretty much. Well, on that note, that is going to wrap things up for us on this edition of Myopia Mornings. I hope you've enjoyed our limited spin-off series going into your old childhood shows. Don't hate us too much for dredging up these memories if, you know, it's things like Beavis and Butthead. But we hope.
Hey, don't worry, Scott. They didn't download. They didn't bother to listen if they didn't want to. Trust me, I've seen the
numbers. we appreciate all the listens, the downloads, the shares. Myopia Defend Your Childhood will continue on. So please make sure you are subscribed on your favorite podcast service to continue getting the latest episodes. And that's gonna do it for me. Thank you guys, and nice job, panel. Talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Hey there, folks. My name is JC De La Torre.
And I'm Rita De La Torre.
And we are Transmissions from Atlantis, an original member of the ESO network, and we are excited to tell you all about our podcast.
Well, it's everything science fiction, fantasy, horror.
And every single episode will have a segment of Doctor Who. Let's give everybody a taste.
I have my 2 minutes.
Yes.
Okay, then. So no interrupting.
Go ahead.
Fine.
You're using up your 2 minutes.
Shut up. You're interrupting me. Stop it.
You're now up to 50 seconds. This was worse than Kill the Moon.
It was not worse than
Kill the Moon. I would take the moon as an egg before I would take a bunch of trees, sprout up overnight, save the earth, and then magically... And where did the trees go? Where did the trees go? Yes. Transmissions from Atlantis.
Class.
Classy sci-fi pop culture discussions. Check us out, transmissionsfromatlantis.com. Walking through the pond, nothing
seems to penetrate my heart. Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burbs. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks. She's not even half the girl she... Will I stay this way forever? Sleepwalk through my life's endeavor. How can I repay you? This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.